There are a lot of people in our space that believe that this is the only thing they can do. And you know, it's really interesting because when I reach out and I talk to people who are having issues, the police officers, firefighters, I always ask them, tell me about yourself. First thing they say is, I'm a cop, I'm a detective, I'm a this. I rarely hear, I'm a father, you know, I'm a husband, I'm a brother, I'm a sister. They always go back to what they do as their identity, and it's hard for people to strip it.
Hey guys, if you missed out on the last conference in Nashville, Tennessee, you don't want to miss out on the next one. It's April 28th through May 3rd, Orlando, Florida, the Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center. You made a mistake missing the last one. You don't want that to happen again on this one. 5 days of some of the best training you're ever going to experience packed into one event. We have an early bird special right now, $50 off. Use 24 early bird on our website, streetcop.com. Look for the conference, click the link, register today. If you want to get significantly better at this profession in 5 days, don't dare miss out on the 2024 Street Cop Conference. 111, 110.
Street cop.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and we have with us today somebody you are all familiar with, Rob Swayze, a captain retired out of California, and a newcomer to the podcast, Matty Fiorenza, a retired firefighter from the California area. You're retired, right, Matt?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay. And so today will be another discussion that a lot of people in our community look forward to, and that is about mental health and some things along those lines, where there's a really good story to be told here, and I anticipate it's gonna be one of the better podcasts that we've done. And so I'm excited to have both of you here. Thank you so much. And people who haven't heard of you, Rob, before, and Maddie certainly have been on the podcast, can you please give us about a 1 minute Reader's Digest version of who you are and what you do?
I'm a retired police captain out of a small agency in Orange County, California. 30-year career in law enforcement. Towards the end, I went back to school to become a therapist. And so now I work with cops and firefighters and their families on addiction issues, grief issues, mental health issues. And I run a nonprofit called Blue Lives Matter, which Street Cop Training has been amazing in supporting us over the years and providing us an opportunity to get the word out about us. So please reach out to Blue Wives Matter. We've got a website, bluewivesmatter.net. I am going to plug it, Dennis, because right now we are trying to raise some money to send some kids on a Christmas shopping trip this year. So check out bluewivesmatter.net, make a donation, buy a shirt. The kids will benefit from it.
Awesome. I'm Matty Fiorenza, retired firefighter paramedic, Southern California agency. I got in the behavioral health space just through my own trials with and struggles with addiction, alcoholism, and post-traumatic stress. That sent me off on a journey of healing and recovery, and along the way got really good at speaking to all the different modalities that I used to get well. I volunteered at a trauma retreat, a suicide prevention program for combat veterans and first responders called Sable Warrior, and that really helped me to hone my skills on being able to sit with our brothers and sisters in service in crisis, and then get them to the proper resources, which I've spent a lot of time vetting and meeting a lot of amazing people on the way, like Rob. And now I have a inpatient treatment center, residential and detox in the Palm Springs area. I spend most of my time speaking all over the country about mental health and behavioral health, and raising awareness and helping guys. I mean, my thing is boots on the ground. I take the phone calls. I help refer these guys that are struggling to the proper resources.
Now, a lot of people don't know this, but we tried to do this podcast last week and we were interrupted in our studio by a fire alarm that didn't seem to go off for about 25 minutes. And we essentially decided to just refilm and re-give it a go here at this podcast episode. So, you know, Matty, I think that maybe telling your story of what you had been through and what brought you to this place in your life is probably a good place to go next. So if you wouldn't mind sharing some of those things that you went through.
For sure. And just for the record, you were the only one that heard that fire alarm, bro. So
yeah,
can hear the reality is I just didn't want to talk to you guys. I felt like I just wanted to take a break.
Yeah. So, you know, I was diagnosed with complex PTSD, which, is a combination of childhood trauma and moral injury. So my story starts way back, you know, from the time I was born. My dad was a Vietnam vet. He was a Marine. He was an Orange County Sheriff's Deputy, Sergeant Medal of Valor, and he had PTS. And so the divorces and the moving around a lot as a kid and the bullying and running away at 13 years old, you know, my life was, I was abused by stepfathers. And so I was mentally abused. I was emotionally abused. I was sexually abused. And so I my nervous system was just on fire by the time I even, you know, stepped onto the, to the fire engine. And obviously this stuff wasn't talked about. Behavioral health, mental health was not talked about during the academy or during our training. So I got placed on the west end of town in Anaheim, which is the side of town Disney does not put in the brochures. And I think I just gave up the city I worked for, but no big deal. You know, I was a hard charger and I was a good firefighter and I loved it. I loved the job for a long time. I mean, I still miss it to this day, some parts of it, but I didn't realize that the accumulation of all the trauma was stacking up, right? And so it started showing up through my dissociated behaviors, drinking, you know, riding my Harley too fast down the freeway, buying things I can't afford, infidelity. And so my marriage tanked and then I injured my back, and not doing some like hero shit, you know, I injured my back just, again, cumulative trauma over time, picking up heavy people and carrying heavy equipment. And that's when I really, during that time when I was off work, had just started looking for the exit, essentially, and thinking to myself, you know, if I can't do this job, how am I going to support my family? How am I going to pay my child support? You know, and then really essentially, who am I? Because I put all my eggs in this basket and so I attempted suicide 3 times and ended up in in that trauma retreat that I was talking about. And it was all warrior led. And for the first time, in trying to get help here and there through EAPs and, you know, bullshit like that provided by the city, I was validated by an Army veteran, LAPD officer by the name of Ryan Haggerty, who said, you know, Maddie, everything you're experiencing is 100% normal for someone who's been through what you've been through as a kid and you know, the situations you've had to deal with as a medic and as a firefighter. And just having that validation, I trusted this organization. I spent 5 days up in Malibu at this retreat, and I came back ready to get into the rooms of recovery and start working on getting better. And from there, I didn't think I'd make it back to work. I made it back to work. I was able to be a different kind of guy at work, more focused on taking care of my brothers and sisters and sharing my experience. And that led me to peer support, one of the peer support leads. And then people started asking me to speak and to teach meditation. I'm a big advocate of meditation. So I was teaching at the Basic Fire Academy in Santa Ana. I was, you know, just came up with my own mental health blocks because we're still at the state level. There's nothing really solid. There's still the powers that be are still working on how to get this stuff down and who, what to talk about and how to talk about it and who the instructors are going to be. And, you know, so it was just, I felt like a one-man show for a little while down here. But then I got into the treatment world because I'm in recovery myself. And the reality is that this is where we're going to find these guys, you know, because we're still in a state of stigma and we're hard chargers and we're going to burn it down. Either we're going to kill ourselves. We're going to get in some kind of trouble because we do something that's out of character or something we do while we're drunk. Right. Or and we're going to end up in a treatment center, right? So, so that's, you know, most of the folks that I've come across that are struggling are in those places, right? So, so that's why I got into that space. And from there, I was able to after a long period of time, I decided to medically retire, which was a whole fiasco in itself. It's very difficult to do that. I couldn't do the job anymore. And I believed and I felt in my heart that it was trauma and back injuries and work essentially that pushed me to that part of my life. And so I had to fight for my pension, you know, and it took 2.5 years and it wasn't fun, but now it's another thing that I'm very passionate about. And what that is helping our first responders navigate the work comp system here in California, because I mean, it's fucking bullshit. I'm just gonna throw it out there. You know, it's a broken system and it needs to be addressed, because a lot of guys get denied and they go off and kill themselves, and it's just their fucking process. And it's not, and these guys don't know that, you know, they just think they're brain injured and they think, oh, I asked for help. I had the courage to ask for help, and then I got denied help. And so, you know, Rob and I were in that space with a police psychologist from LA. Her name is Dr. Gina Gallivan. She's been in the space for a long time. So I build wellness programs with her in different agencies, first responder agencies, mostly police. And we help do the preventative stuff. So I've moved into that space too. So, you know, I was at a police agency last week and taught meditation to these guys. And just the way I'm able to convey that message and to teach that tool, it's just well received, because I'm one of you guys. I'm one of us. You know, I'm a big guy. I'm tattooed. Like I've done the job before. So it's just well received, and I've gotten a lot of good feedback about that. So that's just one of the things. But that's where we are today. Really, it's just I was able to get my retirement. Now all I do is behavioral health and mental health stuff. I team up with really amazing people that are doing good work out there, like Rob, and we just do what we can to get out there and to find the people that are struggling and get them to the right help.
Rob, I see you acknowledging some of the things that he's saying as he's talking. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to offer some comments about either vindicating or justifying some of his complaints and statements regarding the mental health and things like that.
Well, there's a lot of themes that Matty brought up in his own personal life that, you know, we deal with in the law enforcement, mental health space, mental wellness space. You know, he mentioned financial issues and women issues and everything. And Dennis, we may have talked about it before, but, you know, the three B's that kill cops' careers are boobs, bills, and booze, you know? And almost everybody that I've been working with in treatment, first responder level, have had issues in all of those areas. You know, it's an interesting space to work in, because it's still, even though there's this big push for peer support and mental wellness and all of this stuff, there's still this barrier that blocks cops and firefighters from reaching out to get the help. And, you know, it's interesting. I've known Matty for what, maybe 8 months now. I met him through the Wounded Blue. I still don't know his whole story, because every time I'm around him and he tells his story, like, you know, we were at a conference yesterday and he told a story. A couple guys broke down. I ended up being outside working with him and trying to work through that stuff. And it's so common in our industry that guys are having these PTSD issues and substance abuse issues and not really knowing where to get help and how to get help. And the thing that Matty and I are focusing on it. So you're going to hear a lot of people in this industry, in the wellness industry, talk about their cultural competence. And quite frankly, I think that most of it's bullshit. You know, there's so many treatment centers that are popping up for mental health and for addiction, and they all talk about how they're culturally competent. But then when you get into their staff and who's working with them, none of them have ever done the job that you and I are doing, Dennis, or you and I have done, and and the job that Maddie's done. It's very, very rare to find people like myself and Maddie who actually worked in one space and are now working in another space. And so, you know, this idea of this cultural competency and pushing these wellness programs, these people don't really understand. So what happens is our first responders go to them and then they fail because they're not given the right tools because they don't know the right tools. And that's why I love working with Maddie, because he's dealt with this. It's been his experience in his life. And, you know, I've got my own PTSD issues. I'm sure, Dennis, you've got some somewhere too. And, you know, I think, you know, because of those experiences, we have a better opportunity to empathize with people, you know, as opposed to being sympathetic, you know. But yeah, the space is it's almost, I wouldn't say crooked, but it's horrible to see a lot of these officers reaching out to get help and they're not getting the right help. And so then things start to break apart even more and more and more. And the, you know, the agencies aren't really well educated in this world right now. And I know Maddie is trying to get that out. And whenever I have an opportunity, I speak with him. But, you know, a lot of the stuff that Maddie went through was completely preventable. It's just, you know, and this is where I look back at my own career and I've seen people implode on themselves. And, you know, early on in my career, I was complicit and I didn't say anything. That's their issue. They can figure it out. But as I kind of grew a little bit more in my career, I realized I have an opportunity to save somebody else's career by stepping in and say, dude, knock that shit off because we're seeing it, or this is going on, or we need to give you some help. It's interesting because as cops, they pay us a whole lot of money to go out and solve problems in the community, but we do a horrible job solving the problems within our own agency. And so, you know, I feel for Maddie and I really empathize with him in many ways. You know, I can't really relate to his substance abuse issues. I can relate to some other issues with him. But, you know, it saddens me because I think there were people along the way that could have changed the trajectory of Maddie's life. And I see that in a lot of police agencies and a lot of cops. And, you know, we can sit back and watch people implode and that happens, you know. So,
I mean, yesterday, article comes out, 4 members of the LA Sheriff's Department died by apparent suicide, 2 ruled suicide immediately by the coroner's office. I was reading about that with medical examiner, whatever it may be, you know, and I, when I posted about that on social media, I do not like making people martyrs. I just want them to be remembered. And obviously the martyring happens inevitably, but it's something that's so profound that doesn't need to happen in a community with so many wonderful human beings who've agreed to do this job. And I talked to a girl last night. She literally, just to give you an example, I'm friends with her. She'll listen to this. She's out of North Carolina. She literally just decided to leave her police department to go do something completely different. And she's like, I love policing. I just can't work here anymore. And when she gave her notice to leave, they like laughed at her and didn't like take her seriously that she was going to be leaving the agency. And so last night's was her final night. She reached out to me because she's a, you know, really, really nice soul. And, you know, essentially was like, I'm like, well, are you handing your gear back in? She's like, yeah, but I think they think I'm just not going to like go through with it. And she's like, I'm done. I love this profession, but I can't. And dude, we're at a point now where, you know, I'd have to encourage people if the option is to find a new path, and that path doesn't have thoughts of suicide or self-harm, that's your better path. And, you know, I get it. Everybody tells themselves the story of like, I don't have college. I'm useless. I don't have any other value in the world. And I want to go back to this because I do want to get a comment from both of you guys about this incident with these 4 apparent suicides. You know, people have to get a little more understanding of, okay, if this isn't going to be the thing you're going to do, that's okay. Mm-hmm. I'd rather you do something else than take your life because you think you have no other options. But let's come back to that in a second. Well, no, let's go right to it now. And Maddie, that was one of my first questions for you, because I feel like a lot of people may go down this road of what am I going to do now, like you did. So when you were saying that to yourself, what ended up being the answer? What did you end up doing now?
That's a great question. You know what I did? I worked on my own recovery. I just worked on getting well. And, you know, I'm a real believer that we all have a purpose. You know, we all have a purpose, and that purpose changes throughout life, right? I thought the end all be all was that I was going to be this bitchin' truck captain, and I was going to, you know, retire after 30 years with all these toys and the family all intact. And that didn't freaking happen. You know what I mean? So I took that long-term goal, if you will, and I just did it a day at a time. You know, I was like, I'm going to get well. And then organically, as I got well, people were coming to me and asking me questions, and how did you do this? And how did you navigate that? And how, you know, and I just got really good at helping the next person. And that just, you know, because people ask me all the time, Maddie, how do I do what you're doing? I said, dude, I go help somebody else, you know, go get vulnerable, what's your story? What have you done to get well? You know, it's not just about learning, reading the books and then going out there and trying to bullshit people. Cause in this space, you have to be authentic, you know, or people see right through it, especially us. So I just a day at a time worked on my own recovery and then looked for people to help. And here I am, you know, doors just start opening up. And that's what I love that you brought that up, because so many guys I've seen 5 years on the job that go and do this, they go kill themselves instead of saying, this job isn't for me, you know, because, you know, I mean, on the fire side, like, what the fuck am I going to do with an auto extrication certification and some volunteer work at the fucking local fire department? I'm not going to be able to do shit with that. But the reality is that as much as we are stoic and tradition, full of tradition, and we work so hard for the job and it becomes our identity, it's just a fucking job, man. And it's not worth
it. I say that all the time, and I want people to have pride with the work that they do. But if we're talking to those people who this job is putting you into a place of bad thoughts and feeling like there's no escape. Guys, it's a job. Yeah. Like, there are thousands of jobs out there. Don't let people write into us like, hey, man, I lost my job. I'm not longer a cop. What's your advice? And the advice is like, man, you know, it's one step at a time. I mean, maybe just going on Indeed and seeing what's available, throwing 100 resumes out there, doing some follow-up calls. You may find yourself significantly happier in 2 years doing something completely different. And who cares what people think? I want to read to you what I wrote last night when I posted the article about the 4 Los Angeles Sheriff Department's losses. And then I'll ask Rob for a comment on that. And then Maddie as well, because I think it's going to strike a chord with Maddie. And this is what I put. Listen to me and listen to me good. Hang in there. Don't give up. Your pain won't go away. It will be transferred to 10 times to those who love you. Everyone is loved. Everyone has purpose. If you just don't take your life and give it some time, you'll be thankful that you chose not to. Life isn't easy, but it's beautiful. Part of that beauty can be some challenging times. But those times don't last forever. Surviving is progress. Sometimes you must surrender to the truth that you may need someone to help you. It doesn't make you weak. That makes you strong. The one line that my therapist gave me was, surviving is progress. Mm-hmm. That's a big one for me. You know, like, surviving is progress. And I'm just going to follow up with this is, I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary about the people who jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. And I think, if I'm quoting it correctly, there was a guy who survived and he said, the very second I jumped off was the immediate moment I wish I could go back. I regretted it. And so you must think about when these people take that leap, they probably at that moment say, oh my God, I wish I could undo this. There is a better solution. So Rob, your thoughts on that, and we'll go to Maddie.
You know, it's interesting. You brought up that specific story because my brother-in-law, he jumped off the Coronado Bridge about 4 years ago and killed himself, left his wife and 2 kids behind. And I'm just now,
why? Kind
of, you know, it's that feeling of helplessness. This is a guy who struggled for a long time with some issues and was getting help. And then the help just kind of, I think to an extent, he let it disappear. You know, he kind of came to this, I believe he came to this belief that there's nothing I can do to change who I am or what's going on. And he wasn't law enforcement, but whether law enforcement, fire, or just the general public, you have to really strip down your identity to be able to not reach out for help, but to accept it. You have to really strip it down and just kind of give yourself to it. And the tough part in law enforcement and in firefighters is we, and Maddie mentioned the word, we have this identity that we have to be the all, the end all. We have to show strength. You know, asking for help might be a sign of weakness. We are problem solvers. We're not people with problems. Those are kind of the things that we adopt and believe. And when you start to do that, you are less willing to ask for and accept help because that gives you this belief that there's this level of weakness. Well, I would submit that probably some of the strongest things that Maddie's had to do in his life is not necessarily ask for help, but to accept it. And I could be wrong, but just from what I've gotten to know about Maddie is that it's the acceptance at the hard part. And then the stripping of the identity. There are a lot of people in our space that believe that this is the only thing they can do. And you know, it's really interesting because when I reach out and I talk to people who are having issues, the police officers, firefighters, I always ask them, tell me about yourself. First thing they say is, I'm a cop, I'm a detective, I'm a this. I rarely hear, I'm a father, you know, I'm a husband, I'm a brother, I'm a sister. They always go back to what they do as their identity. And it's hard for people to strip it. And you know, those four suicides that are being described, one of them was retired. And I would say that in the first 6 months of somebody's retirement, who's had some PTSD issues and identity issues, that's when you got to watch them really closely, because that's when there's a higher level of suicide rates with police officers. It's really, really hard to step away from that and say, you know, that's what I do. That's not necessarily who I am. Now, the things that we do, they form our moral beliefs, our ethical beliefs, they form a little bit about who we are, but that doesn't make us the person that we are. If you can go for the first 21 years of your life and establish, you know, if you look at that, I mean, think about it. Most of the things that we really need to know to get through life, we all learn it in kindergarten. Everything else is just kind of icing on the cake, right? And then all of a sudden you become a cop or a firefighter at the age of 21, and then we start to reject some of the things that we once believed or once knew, and we start adapting this identity. And once you put on that, I wouldn't call it a disguise, but that persona, that becomes the person that you are. I mean, I've seen marriages end because, you know, before the husband was a cop or a firefighter, they were a great person. And 2 years later, now all of a sudden they're an asshole. It's because of this adaption of the identity. It's because of the unresolved trauma that might be present. It's the inability to first ask for help and secondly accept it. And then I'm going to throw this out. I was a police captain. Another component to all of this is that agencies are not really that good at providing help, in the sense that there's still this fear that if I ask for help, I'm going to be ostracized, I'm going to be forced to retire. You know, am I going to lose my gun? Am I going to lose my job? Am I going to lose all this? And it's really, really hard to strip that identity. And I'm going to take it one step further. If you start looking at groups of cops, and I don't know about firefighters, but groups of cops, you'll start to see that they start. I mean, Dennis, you know a lot of undercover guys, right? Well, when they live in that world, they start to fully adopt.
Oh, yeah.
They now start to adopt a whole new persona.
Bro, like, it's funny you bring that up, because that's, and I can't share details, but I got to tell you, these guys, not all of them, but I knew some people in the undercover world that literally began to identify as their identity. And, you know, bro, like, you know, just, I would say to some of them, because I knew them well, like, are you guys fucking insane? Like, are you out of your mind?
Hey guys, follow us on all social media platforms, to include Instagram, Twitter, Facebook group. We have so much information going out every single day, and we don't want you to miss out on any of that stuff. So check it out. Go give us a follow.
I personally know four officers that were assigned to deep undercover units or undercover units, surveillance units, whatever you want to call them, who have lost their career to addiction related issues because the lines of identity got blurred. Not saying they were doing anything illegal, but lines started to get blurred. And, you know, when I ask a cop, you know, what do you do for a living? And they immediately say, well, I'm a narcotics officer. Bullshit. You're not a narcotics officer. You're a police officer. You sign up for whatever, you know, we all sign up for. Mm-hmm. And then they start getting to this undercover world. And, you know, and Maddie and I, we've worked with a couple of guys that have been in that space. So when you talk about identity, now you're blurring the lines of identity because of that. And part of that I blame on the agencies. I mean, I think it's the narcs out there that are listening to this or watching this are probably going to disagree with me, but you know, to assign somebody to a specialized unit like that without any oversight and you leave them in for a long period of time, there's going to be problems. There's going to be problems. And
I think the advice here is just, you know, be aware that that's potential if you're in a unit like that. So take into account maybe a self-check of like, what am I doing? What am I up to? And you know, I could never speak of the things that, and again, just because I don't want to tarnish anybody, but, you know, I've intervened and I'm like,
yeah,
you know, you understand what I'm seeing. And, you know, I gotta be honest with you. I did a temporary run in narcotics. I did 90 days. I did not return to narcotics. It was not for me for many reasons. It is just not. But I remember the first reason was, Rob, I'll never forget this moment in my life. I used to go to this deli. Oh, the macaroni salad. Oh, I mean, I'm salivating thinking about it. The macaroni salad there is just, it's well known for it. And then I used to get the same sandwich every time. And dude, I went there a lot. Oh, I walk in undercover and the way I was treated, like they didn't know it was me. As nuts it sounds, just because they didn't, and like, dude, they just treated me like shit. And I was like, guys, like, I remember taking off my hat and like everything, like, I'm the guy, you know, I'm your cop. And they're like, oh shit, like, what are you doing? And I'm like, yeah, I'm on the, dude, like, and those guys were like happy with the fact that that's how the world responded to them. I couldn't live with it.
Well, wait, yeah. I think this is where
there we are good checks and balances. Go ahead, Maddie.
I mean, you're probably going to say the same thing, Rob, but we got to think outside the box when it comes to this stuff, right? So, I mean, on this subject alone, think of what that does to the human psyche, right? And Rob and I are probably talking about the same person here, but you have to take on a different persona to do your job, right? And there's got to be some psychological guru out there that could help navigate and teach these guys how to deal with that. Because what happened with this guy was that he was working undercover a bunch, and then he saw one of the shitheads or whatever out of one of his kids' sports games.
Boom. Right.
You know what I mean? Now that fucks you up mentally, right? And so that's kind of when like I said, I've never gone undercover. I couldn't do that shit. Like, I mean, I have. I mean, honestly, dude, but I cheated on my wife for a long time. That's undercover. Right. I had to take on a different persona. I mean, it's no comparison, but I'm just saying, like, it was me living a lie, essentially. And I think somatically or like physiology, like our bodies don't know, yeah. You know, so it's got to do something to the psyche. And there's, you know, I'm sure Rob can probably teach a whole class on how to navigate that.
Well, I think there's a lot of checks and balances that can come into play when you're talking about, you know, undercover work. And, you know, and Dennis and I, we've talked about it a lot. It's not about great supervision. It's about great leadership and, you know, being more connected and not letting those specialized units become disconnected from the agency, because things can happen. But it doesn't have to be just that, you know, that type of situation. It could be other types of situations in our professions that we just need to look out. And we see it. We see when we walk into a briefing and we see a guy that probably hung over from the night before, we know it, we see it, but what do? We don't do anything about it. We don't say anything to them. We don't, you know, hey, dude, what's going on in your house? What's going on at home? Are you okay? Is there, you know, we'd like to be able to, you know, push this idea of peer support. And quite frankly, oftentimes it doesn't work because, you know, do you want to tell your peers what's going on? I mean, I support the idea and the concept of it and a well-developed peer support, but, you know, you have to try to create a space where you can call people out, and then you have to create another space that where you're called out, you feel safe. Like, my job's not on the line, you know, like in California. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a police officer and you have some severe mental health issues and they decide to place you on an involuntary hold, you now lost your right to carry a gun. Guess what? You can't go to work, you know? So all of these things, and the sad thing is, and I've had conversations with people when I've seen them start to go down the rabbit hole. And then unfortunately, I've not had conversations when I've seen people go down the rabbit hole. And if I could go back 25 years and say, dude, knock that shit off because your career is going to be over if you don't. I didn't have those conversations when I should have. And bad things happen, you know?
I think that we are playing an appropriate role now as older gentlemen, Rob, really old. But, you know, I think that's, you can't blame yourself for not knowing those things when you were younger because nobody ever taught them to you.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, we all came from lower middle class families. Let's face facts. There's no way that anybody here in this conversation. So, but what we have done is we've evolved into being thought leaders and caring human beings from that space. And man, I like, I'm so thankful that I was able to see my way out of that perpetual cycle of where I could have been stuck. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to knock people. I'm saying, like, here's the way, man. Like, come along. Like, it's so much better to be a great human being on this side of things. And it doesn't come without just a different set of headaches.
Right.
When you're trying to do good things for the world.
Yeah. You know, I had essentially a bunch of combat veterans come back for me, you know, and someone came back for them in this space. Right. It's like, we really do well at not leaving anybody behind out there, you know, in theater, downrange, on the mean streets of wherever. But when it comes to this stuff, it's like, fuck, man. Like, a lot of guys are like, I don't want what that guy's got. You know, and
someday, guess what? Someday you might have what that guy's got, and exactly. nobody is immune to a breaking point in their life that is just too much to bear. Even the guy talking right now, this year has been probably, I just had this conversation this morning. It's been a very challenging year in my life. It's a very big understatement. And I talked to Beck, who is our VP this morning, and I said, you know, Beck, everything I've been through, having this moment of reflection of like, man, I'm just so thankful that I went through what I've been through, because what I understand about mental health now and me as a person and understanding what my breaking points are. And so when somebody else says something like, hey, I'm having a lot of anxiety today, just want to give them a hug. And 3 years ago, I'd have been like, you're fucking anxiety. Right? What are you talking? Right now, I'm just like, what can I do for you? Because I know what that feels like. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really enjoy the feeling of it. But I certainly am aware of it for the first time in my life. I'd be 41 to fucking it for the first time feel, because I have a high pain tolerance when it comes to emotional intelligence. I mean, I'm, you know, I grew up in a war zone. My brain was molded a certain way. I have a very high pain tolerance. I can handle a lot. And I thought I could handle everything. And so I'm glad that God put me through it. I recognize why. I think it also corrected some of my behaviors. I think it's all for a good reason. And I'm thankful for everything that has happened to me. But the reality is like, it's very hard for people to relate to it when they've never felt it. Mm-hmm. And just don't think that it's never going to be you. Because I'm going to tell all you motherfuckers out there, like, don't tempt that beast. Right. Don't ask the universe for you to experience that, because it's not fucking fun. And when you think you've been through something, wait, because there's something even better on the horizon that's going to fucking... But the good news is check this out. I'm able to tell you things that I told myself during those times. And those times weren't that long ago. I mean, we're talking about this previous year. And, you know, so some of those things are, Dennis need to be there for Dennis. Dennis is there for everybody. But at some point, I had to recognize myself, I came to this, that Dennis needs Dennis and nobody else. And I had to step away and say to my staff here, like, you guys will have to maintain while I have to step away and take a breather for a little bit. It's a lot. And I had a lot going. And, you know, my therapist, just to give some context without going into great detail, because there's just some things I can't share yet, but I will eventually. My therapist said to me, kiddo, I can't tell you, you have been through it. You have, let's just call it what it is. You have got your fucking ass kicked. She's like, so let's just acknowledge that. Let's take a minute for you and I to sit here and say, you have been through it. Man, oh man. She's like, and I got to tell you, I'm so proud of you being here, resilient and still doing your work. But just acknowledge that you have gone through some of the most fucked up shit that I've seen. And I said, I appreciate that. But the reality is one, some of the things that she gave me as tools to use is like, bro, surviving is progress. I'm a guy that needs to be here progressing all the time. I'm the thought leader here at this company. I'm the guy with the new ideas. I'm the guy saying where we're going next. And we just had to put the engines in neutral and say, Captain's on vacation for a week. I cannot be in here. I just can't do it. And so I would advise anybody to sometimes maybe you just have to take a step back, burn 5 or 6 vacation days just to get yourself healed a little bit. And just remember that surviving is progress. You know, you're just keep breathing, keep walking. It's going to get better. It just is. It's just going to get fucking better.
You know, I want to add one thing to that. Here's the thing, right? Especially as a thought leader, or, you know, I think we all could be in certain aspects, but we are drowning in information and we are starving for wisdom. And wisdom comes when you're quiet and you settle your thinking down. And that's all done in a space of self-care, right? That's when
you have to go into self-care. Yeah, you have to. You got to check out. You got to walk off for a week, 2 weeks, a month, whatever it's going to be. You know, you don't want to go to a facility. Listen, I mean, I have my thoughts on that. I think that some people are at that point where if you feel like you're losing control, it's that fucking phone call. Just call up, make that anonymous call, start getting that path, because, you know, nobody's going to know. Nobody knows what you're going through. Especially, I mean, look at me, Rob. I'm a guy who everybody's like, you know how people feel about me. Some people see me as the messiah for law enforcement. I hate to sound like an asshole, but that's the truth. And the work that we've done as a company, all of us, including all the people like you that have been part of it as well, I think they see me as somebody who's bulletproof. And the reality is like, I'm not. I have a high pay tolerance. I'm good problem-solving skills. I'm entertaining. I'm kind of handsome. But, you know, I'm a human being like everybody else, and I have my weaknesses as well. And I'm on a constant mission to become the best version of Dennis Bonino that he could possibly be. And I want to advocate that for everybody. Like, I'm your guy. I'm the guy that you guys want to take pictures with, and you see me out, and it's fantastic. But man, I'm just no different than you are. And I think that you need to understand that it's okay, because the guy that you look up to, like, I haven't been okay as well. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make me weak. It's said with the intention for you to recognize that there may become a point in your life, you have a loss of your life. Dude, I got clobbered from all angles. It just never stopped. It was a barrage. It brought me to my knees and asking the Lord, please. Like, you've hit enough. Like, you got to give me a break now. And so I also want to say that the darkest nights are followed by the brightest days. So excited about the future, man. And I'm so excited. Like, every time things feel, you know, tough, just look at my kids and I'm like, you know what, man? Like, boy, it's just so worth it.
Yep.
For these children to have their father with them, you know, and dude, like, your mind just goes to places. I have a friend of mine right now, his mind going all over the place. And I'm like, I've been you. I'm going to try to talk some sense to you. You've got to learn how to calm your loop in your brain that plays on this constant repetitive cycle of what the worst that's going to happen is going to be. And so we've got to look beyond that. What does it look like after that happens? Are you going to be okay? And the reality is you're going to be fine.
Yeah, there's science behind that stuff. See, that's the thing that we haven't talked about yet, is that PTS, from all the research that's out there, all the white papers that have been written, all the, you know, the propeller heads out there that are studying this stuff, it's a brain injury, right? When you have chemical dumps, when you're under stress over time, the parts of your brain that are responsible for that, your brain changes. So when the organ you use for cognition, right, is injured, it makes sense that guys get caught in loops and that the fucking voices get loud. And I mean, there's science behind all of it. So it's like, and that's where I can really, that really speaks to guys, right? When I talk about meditation and say, hey, look, this is your basal ganglia. It's a bundle of nerves, kicks off the fight or flight process. It starts growing more nerves. Your amygdalas grow. You dump these cortisol, adrenaline, melatonin, norepinephrine into your body. It destroys your neural pathways. And then you wonder why you can't fucking, why you want to put your wife through the drywall, because she has to do the fucking dishes, man. Like, there's science behind it, right? And then we get caught in these loops. So that's one of the components, right? That when I explain to guys, hey, meditation scientifically proven to shrink your amygdalas. And, you know, there's treatments out there to reset your basal ganglia, and you can do spec scans and see what your brain looks like. And then guys can get behind it. They're like, fuck, man, I'm not, you know, one of my favorite mentors, man, he says, heal your brain and your mind will follow. So there's a lot of brain health shit. I tell guys, if you don't like mental health, let's call it brain health, man. We take care of our, you take care of your fucking, your biceps and your, you know, we're really good at that shit. We eat healthy. We, you know, we work out. We want to look good and fucking, you know, athlete warrior shit. But it's like, man, dude, what about your coconut, dude? Shit's going on up there. And you wonder why you're behaving this way, or you're acting out of character, or you're angry all the time, right? It's that simple, man. And people can get behind that. I think I like to take that approach because guys are like, okay, man, I can get behind that. It's like, I'm not broken. I'm not crazy. I don't have mental health issues, whatever stigma bullshit guys want to believe. It's like, dude, your fucking brain is twisted, dude. We got to get that in line. And there's ways to do that. Hyperbaric and, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, that guys are doing. It's just like, you know, float tanks and getting quiet and doing some meditation and whatever, you know, and guys just, we knock the granola and the patchouli off it, man. And we fucking make it cool. I don't know. Just a thought.
No, I agree, Rob.
You know, I think I'm just listening to what you guys are saying, you know, and I want to go back to just the part about asking for and accepting help. And, you know, we need to change the culture within our organizations, within our industry to make it more acceptable to ask for help and then receive help in an effective way. And also understand our limitations. And I'm just going to tell you a story. Maddie knows of this story too. I'm not going to tell you the agency, but here's a prime example of well-intended people trying to do the right thing with bad results. And that was, there was an officer who was suicidal, and instead of reaching out to some professionals and getting them behind it, they all thought, well, you know what, we're just going to surround ourselves, but we're going to stay with them for the week, and we're going to stay with them at the house. And, you know, we're cops. We know how to handle this. And sure as shit, the guy, they're talking a little bit, goes upstairs and shoots himself and kills himself. So reaching out to the right people, asking for the right help, it can be difficult to do that. But the idea is that, you know, there are people out there that want to help. Understand your limitations. When it comes to substance abuse, and this is where Maddie and I are working in the space right now with substance abuse, you know, we can see our peers going down that rabbit hole. So step in, try to help them. Our goal is to help preserve these people in many ways in our treatment, the way that we provide treatment. We want to preserve their families. We want to preserve them. We want to help them preserve their careers if that's their choice, if that's what they want to do. And, you know, sometimes it goes too far and it's hard to get you back to that safe place. We can do it, but what are you going to lose along the way to get to that point? Are you going to lose your kids? You're going to lose your wife? You're going to lose your career? You're going to get incarcerated, you know? So recognizing that it's okay to step up and, you know, I'll make sure that, you know, Frankie has the information to be able to reach out to one of us if somebody needs help, and we can help with good directions and, you know, just keeping yourself in check. It's important to, there's nothing wrong with seeing a therapist. There's nothing wrong with dealing with your issues when they happen. It's just, we have to become more acceptable to that environment and understanding that we have limitations. I would also make a suggestion is, to help you keep you grounded and to help with that whole identity thing is, I don't know a lot about the fire service, but I'm starting to learn a lot about it. And one thing I've learned, especially when it comes to substance abuses, firefighters spend a lot of their time off with other firefighters on the weekends. The families get together, they're out at the river, they're drinking together, they're doing all this stuff. They don't seem to really connect with people outside. Same thing with cops. We don't always try to connect with people outside of our industry. You know, try to make it a point to talk to people that aren't in your world to understand how other worlds are, you know, and it's really humbling to see. Like, I work with general population too. I work with people that have been in prison for 10, 15, 20 years, and they come into the addiction space. They treat me with great respect, even after they find out I was a cop. And you start thinking about all this trauma that police officers are going through and firefighters are going through. Talk to somebody that's been in prison for, you know, 30 years and look at their childhood trauma and really understand that at the end of the day, we're all people we just react differently to different things, and it just, you know, get out into another space, and because eventually you may need help. And, you know, like, here's an example. I had a couple cops in my treatment program, and they actually wanted to work with the general population because it gave them a different perspective that they kind of forgot about in their life, something different. So know your limitations, ask for help. And I think what the three of us here really bring to the table is that maybe we did not bring to the table when we were 21, 22, 23 is wisdom. You know, as time goes by, we become a little bit wiser. We recognize our own failures, our own mistakes, and we're willing to talk about those failures and mistakes to show that people can come out on the other side.
I have a question before we finish from Maddie, and I think it's an important one, and it actually pretty much tied into what Rob just said, but specifically for you.
Okay.
And this may correlate back to some of the things that I've dealt with over the past couple of years, almost 3 years of my life. And again, this may not reflect me completely in the sense it's maybe not who I'm speaking about. Not that I would be ashamed if this was me, but it's a two-part question. The first part is, did you ever think about getting help earlier than when you reached the breaking point? And what would you say to someone who is ignoring that trauma? They know it exists and they're starting to feel it a little bit. It comes and it goes. I have an answer for it, but I'd like to hear yours first. And I think it's going to be the same one.
So the answer is yes, I did. I did think about it. And I dipped my toe in the water. And when I got the quote unquote help, I got scared. You know, the truth is I got scared, and because, and you know, this isn't a make wrong. I didn't have the support, and we didn't know what we know now, right? So I dipped my toe in the water. And I'll be specific. I was struggling with all these things and PTS and I was my substance abuse and my alcoholism was at an all-time high. So I asked for help. And the first thing that was, when I went to go see this at the CAP, the first thing they said was, "You're gonna take a drug test." First thing. The lady told me, "You're going to go take a drug test, and I hold the keys to you ever working in this city again."
Wow.
Yeah. So what did I do? I fucking went downstairs. I called my union rep and I said, "There's no fucking way I'm taking a drug test." Right. Now, had they come to me, had it been Rob or myself, someone say, "Hey, Maddie, I'm using this. I'm drinking too much. I need help." Man, we have a whole different way of going about getting this guy help. A whole different, right? And then I went to a therapist who diagnosed me with PTSD and told me I need some Xanax and a good lawyer. You know, so the answer is yes. I did, but I got scared because those are the things that happen, right? And my advice to people who are going through those things right now is just, you know, find the right people, you know, reach out to someone that you can trust that will help you to navigate the situation and protect you and your job. And ultimately just make you feel safe, man. I didn't feel safe. I didn't feel safe on the job. I didn't feel safe at home. And then the people that were supposed to take care of me and make me feel safe, they failed me. You know, and I'm here and Rob are here to make sure that doesn't fucking happen to guys. You know what I mean? So I tell you, guys call me from all over the country. Maddie, I need help. Okay, great. This is what we're going to do. Boom, 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 boom. All the way down the line, we're going to get these people involved. And first and foremost, we're going to get you safe. And then we're going to protect your fucking job, man. Because there's life on the other side of this stuff. And in and the resilience on the other side and the knowledge on the other side and the wisdom on the other side. This person, instead of just firing them and they're off doing something else, or much worse, they take their own life, they're a freaking asset for their department. An absolute 100% asset. You're taking somebody who was in that place and got well. It's like, there's no better teacher on your department than guys like that. So I hope that answered the question.
Where can people find you guys?
I've always been open on this podcast, and I've given out my cell phone number, and I will do that again. 714-768-1219. I currently am a therapist out at First Recovery, Recovery First, which is out in Palm Springs. It's an inpatient treatment center, and I'm the executive director and therapist for Unified Wellness Center in Newport Beach, California. We offer treatment programs for cops, firemen, veterans. We can be found on unifiedwellnesscenter.com. My email address, I'll give it out. I have no problem with that. It's my last name, SWEAZA@gmail.com. Reach out. If I don't have the answers, I'll connect you with somebody that might. I'm just, I can be reached. You can reach me through Dennis. People have reached out to Dennis before saying, hey, I need help in this space. There was an officer fatality over a couple of years ago. Remember, Dennis, that guy reached out to you and he was actually, he's actually become a pretty good contact for me. I would say I don't really work with him on a therapeutic side, but more peer-to-peer. He's become a good friend, and he reached out to Dennis and said, hey, I don't know how to deal with this, with the mental health issues that it's affecting my officers. Dennis connected him with me, and so there's so many ways we can connect. If you're at the next conference, I'll probably be there. But reach out, ask for help, and I'm easily contacted, and I do get calls from people that go through street cop training, and so yeah, I'm available. And when it comes to treatment, and Maddie may be able to talk briefly on this, is don't hesitate to ask. It's not a hard process to get somebody into treatment. If somebody was to call us today and say, hey, I got an alcohol issue, I got a substance abuse issue, I need help, I need to get into inpatient, I literally could get somebody into a treatment center within an hour, or I can get you on a plane within an hour, hour and a half to get you to the treatment center you need to be at. It's not a hard process to, it's a hard process to ask for help, but once you've asked, the rest of it, we can make it happen pretty quick. And then I do want to mention Dennis and Maddie can talk about this, is his involvement with PTSD 911. So I think it's important we talk about that, Maddie, if you can give it a plug.
Yeah.
So
yeah. First, my contact information, I'll give you that. It's I also give my phone number out. It's the best way to get a hold of me. And that's also 714-917-9395. Give me a call if that's the best way to get a hold of me. And I also have an Instagram. It's fireman_Maddie. So that's the Instagram, and you can get a hold of me on there too. I was contacted by a documentary filmmaker, probably over 4 years ago now, maybe a little bit more, who said he was documenting, PTSD. He was doing a different documentary about the opioid crisis, and he was riding along with some of these law enforcement officers. He witnessed a overdose, and he was wrecked from witnessing this, and he asked the officer, like, how do you deal with this stuff? Like, it just seems like another day for you. And she started to open up to him, and he was like, this is what my next documentary is going to be about, because we need to raise awareness. Like, I don't think the general public knows what these guys are going through in this arena. So he started following me around 3.5 years. I was like at the top of my game at the time, not knowing that I would start struggling again. And he videoed and followed me around and all that. So there's a dispatcher in the film. She took the Boston Marathon bombing call. Myself and a law enforcement officer, and then it's called PTSD 911 movie. There's special screenings all over the country. you can look it up, and or you can bring it to your own agency. It's very inexpensive, and usually we bring it to an agency, invite, you know, the public, everybody that you think would be interested in seeing, show up and do a panel afterwards, and then you know, get some nonprofits in there too to help, because that's really nonprofit. There's so many good nonprofits out there doing really good work to try and take care of us, you know. But yeah, that's it's been pretty impactful. And there's more to come with that. Kind of, we're not putting it out yet, but there's more to the story. You know, we're going to focus more on the solution, because since the film's been out, we lost the dispatcher. She completed.
Wow.
Heartbreaking, man. Like I have one word for all these suicides. Just unfucking acceptable. It's unacceptable. We got to do something about this, because there's a solution.
So I think we are doing something about it.
Yeah. Amen, brother.
All right, boys. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
See you guys soon.
Yep. As usual, Dennis, thank you much.
Hey guys, check out our upcoming training at streetcop.com. Don't forget, we have 50 instructors nationally teaching a variety of topics. These are the best classes you're going to experience in your career. We make sure of it. You're going to love it. I guarantee you, you're going to be thankful that you went. Check us out at streetcop.com for all upcoming classes in your area.